Do you remember that old joke, three comdis professionals walk into a bar and, oh, wait, you've never heard it before? We haven't either. But what if three comdis professionals did walk into a bar, sit down at a table, and have thoughtful conversations about a whole host of topics? What if you could eavesdrop and maybe even pull up your own chair? And what if that bar was actually a coffee shop? Because at least one of us would inevitably fall asleep or want to dance after a couple glasses of wine. This series is that conversation in the coffee shop where you get to listen in on thoughtful discussions about a variety of topics from the perspective of a medical SLP, a school-based SLP, and a professor in communication sciences and disorders. Grab a drink, pull up a chair, and let's get started.
Welcome back, Fishbowl friends. I'm Katie Weidstrom Landgraf, and today's episode has probably our strangest title yet. It's called Wading into the Ick Pond, and you may already be wondering, wow, where are we going with this? Where we're going is into kind of the darker side of some of the things we deal with professionally. And when we were talking about this, we were thinking about what are these specific questions around things that make us feel really kind of gross in our jobs. And we realized that there is a common theme, and the common theme is that feeling of ickiness, that heaviness. And so that's what we're talking about today, friends. It's not going to be easy, but we're going to do it together. Settle down, sit back, and get ready to talk about things like resentment, conflict, rejection, minimization. We're doing it. Here we go. Hello, Maddie. Hello, Janet.
Hi, Katie.
Hello, Katie. I do want to emphasize the wading. We're not diving in full force. Wading in, dipping our toes.
Wading in. Before I lived where I lived, I had a hobby farm, and it had this pond with turtles in it, and the kids would dare each other. We called it the gross pond, and they would dare each other to get in on one side and swim across to the other side. And it was the grossest thing because you couldn't put your feet down. You just didn't want to touch anything. So I love this topic. It reminds me of trying to swim through something just icky and not be touched by anything. Don't know if that's possible. Mm. Be a fun topic for me.
And yet I feel like everyone knows what we're talking about when we say wading into the ick pond. Now that we've explained it, it's all of those professional experiences of discomfort. And, I would say that it was hard to figure out, do we do a whole episode on resentment? No, because some of the feelings have a lot of overlap. So you have these experiences, but kind of what comes out of them, there are definitely some common themes. And so that's why we're in the ick pond. We are just waiting. Maddie, I don't think I'm going to be able to swim across. I don't think I necessarily have answers for cleaning up an ick pond, but we do have some thoughts and some ideas about managing in the moment.
And surviving those thoughts and feelings.
Yeah. So when I brought up some of those big ideas, resentment, conflict, rejection, minimization. What sort of was activating for you? And can you talk about some of your own experiences with one or a combination of those? Janet, could you start?
I will say, I think that the COVID time has been very good for me to kind of pause and reflect on some of the experiences. I think for me, it's those moments where you don't feel maybe heard or valued, or you feel underutilized or shut down, where you don't feel like you have space to bring in the things you have to offer. And So from when I say COVID's been good for me, I think not that that sounds awful. the time of pulling back from in-person work for an extended length of time gave me some space to think about what pieces of that are beyond my control, and are there pieces where I have agency or can make some individual changes that are going to not solve the problem, but just be like a productive thing, like a what can I change in myself? What do I have control over? Maddie, do you want to jump in? What comes to mind when you're thinking about your experiences with the ick pond?
Mine would be rejection is what stands out at me. Just because I've applied for jobs and been rejected. And that was a little bit of a shock. Or I've had a client who, and I've seen it in the settings where they've preferred another speech pathologist for whatever reason. And so learning that the rejections, I think at first I took them personally. It's like, what do you mean you don't want me for this position? And my husband wisely said, he's from the business field. He said, it's not you. It's they weren't looking, you didn't match the position. And it's the same with, you know, the client. There was somebody who just had a different rapport building. Wasn't a personal thing against me, but it was learning to understand and wrap my mind around they're not rejecting me. It's just not a good fit. And that always kind of made me feel icky when it happened.
It can feel so personal. Like the first thing can feel, yeah, like you're not wanted. Yeah. Yeah.
I'm not the right one for this job. Of course I am. That's why I applied for it. And that's why I'm good with this skill set, and it's right. It's not taking it personally.
Mm-hmm. How about you, Katie? What? The ick pond.
Yeah. The thing that I get really bogged down in the ick pond, is resentment. So I sometimes really resent what I perceive to be disparities with workload and demands upon time and tasks that are required of me that may not be required of other colleagues. And I want to clarify that is my perception. But it can really kind of start to get me stuck if I spend too much time there, where I'll start to spend like, oh, geez, I really wish I had these dedicated times for prepping in non-student, you know, contact situations, and that was all structured for me. And then my brain will remind me, well, the flexibility you have with building your own schedule lets you do other things. Like, I can sometimes rally, but other times I get kind of stuck. And so I kind of have to be deliberate about the story I'm telling myself to get unstuck in those moments. Because if I just let that poor me, they have something I don't have, resentment fester, not only is it not productive, it actually pulls me off track from doing what I need to do and kind of connecting with the parts of my job that are awesome. Mm.
I love the way you say the story you're telling yourself, because we have these little narratives that run in our mind. The busy brain where we go down these rabbit trails that can be quite counterproductive, and turning that around and really being mindful that what we have running in our heads and the stories we tell ourselves are accurate. Would you add to that? What else would you add to that, Katie?
Yeah. So I have to believe that right now someone is listening to this podcast and they're like, listen, lady. Yeah. The reality is my workload is much, much larger. Mm-hmm. And I don't know why you would say it's a story I'm telling myself. I guess what I would suggest is, to the extent that those spinning thoughts or those ruminating thoughts pull you away from or off track. To the extent that they're pulling you off track, then like, how are they useful to you? Are they serving you in some way? Something can be true and not serve you.
Right.
And so I think for me, it's a slippery slope because I by no means am trying to invalidate experiences of disproportionate workload because I do believe they exist. But I also think that our emotional responses to those situations can add to the experience of suffering, of ick. And that's the one thing I do have some control over. And so it's not easy. Please know, there's no part of me that's saying that this is easy. In mm-hmm. fact, I would suggest otherwise. It's probably one of the most challenging things that we do is to kind of examine our own role in these different aspects of the ick pond. So that kind of brings me to the next point. Have you ever had experiences where you've realized that you had a part or that you maybe intentionally or inadvertently contributed to some of the ick you were experiencing?
That's a big question.
I know. And it's not a fun question. Some of our questions are fun. This is not a fun question.
I acknowledge that.
Yeah.
I can come up with one. For me, you know, we always talk about DEI and B is belonging.
Can you restate what DEI is?
If diversity, that's a new term. Equity and inclusion.
Thank you.
Hyphen B. So I tend to have a mindset where I, just because of my upbringing and background and everything, I tend to feel on the outside of circles. I always wanted to be part of these circles with these, you know, and I, for some reason, I tend to view myself as on the outside of the cool kids or, you know, whatever it is. Not that I want to be cool because I'm kind of beyond that, but I tend to draw a circle and exclude myself. Mm. And that's my own doing. Mm. So I work hard at drawing circles and including myself now. This is why I belong. And so instead of saying, well, they don't like me or, you know, this, I say, this is why I belong. So that's an example of how I add to my own pain and suffering.
Hmm. I was coming back to just those concepts of, I really do think our best and worst traits are two sides of the same coin, right? So I think that in terms of in workplace setting, I think I can be observant or I can notice things that might improve something. But the dark side of that is I think I can come off as critical, or it may appear to other people that I'm trying to undermine good efforts that they're doing, when in my head I'm thinking, oh, I have something great to offer. Like, let me bring my, you know, divine wisdom or whatever it is about how this thing could be improved. And then the pause that I need to make for myself is to really try and put myself in their shoes and think about how has that felt to me in the past. If I'm doing something in good faith, I've brought in a structure, a plan, and then someone else is offering their edits or their solutions at that time. And it doesn't feel great a lot of times. You're like, wait a minute, you're not respecting the time I put into this plan. And so I think when I'm the external critic of someone else's work, I need to really just bring a little more like emotion and empathy to their perspective. And so the two stories in my mind could be mine, where they're like, what if they would just do X different, this would happen. And their story, which is perhaps, you know, why is she trying to undercut my good work? And there's probably elements of truth to both, right? And so I think that's just being able to own that there are two alternate, more than two alternate stories that can be equally true, can be a good starting point for just like giving space like that. Okay, I might have some things I could look at and change that would impact the situation. How about you, Katie?
Okay. So I think, let me just first acknowledge that this is the first time we've done an episode where I have this like tension in my chest because this is uncomfortable and I want to just name it. I feel vulnerable and I feel uncomfortable and,
icky.
I feel icky because we're in the ick pond. Yes.
And it's like being honest, but not throwing anybody under the bus either, you know, right? Like,
right.
Yeah.
So when I think about kind of my own role in some of these experiences of ick, I think sometimes I will secretly stew, right? Like I'll have this feeling and this concern, but I don't necessarily do anything about it. And conversely, I might create all sorts of documentation cudgels and pieces that I've written to kind of compel somebody to see it the way I see it. Sometimes it's putting together data. Sometimes it's, you know, crafting something really well-researched and articulate and compelling. But if I'm being honest with you all and I'm being vulnerable with you all, in those moments, what I really want is for somebody who's not me to do something different to make me feel better. And it doesn't really work very often. It's not a really effective strategy. And so I spend a lot of time with the cudgel or secretly stewing. Both can happen. And it doesn't get me the result that I intend.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
That's powerful, Katie.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, I think coming back to like, what is your intention or what are you trying to achieve through this is a hard and important question. And often I want to feel better or I want people to know I'm right or,
mm-hmm.
See my insight. Right. Right. I feel like this for me kind of butts a little bit into the conflict resolution piece and a really important reframe that I'm starting to do more of is what is the shared interest? What's the shared thing we're trying to accomplish here together? So if it's a productive department, if it's efficient services, if it's maintaining a good like workplace environment, what's the shared thing? And how do we together move towards that shared thing? And for me, that's been really important. And I don't succeed all the time with that. Lots of times I don't. Lots of times I revert back to that. Like, I want to be right. I want people to see how capable and smart I am. But I think if I can get to that, like, we're both working towards a shared piece. That's a really important framing for me. Maddie, you look like you're thinking about something.
I'm thinking how that ties back into my feelings of not always... of tending to take things personally and with conflict resolution, stepping outside of that, it's not a personal thing. The conflict is probably not a personal thing, more of a professional thing. And stepping away from something that is not working for me and not effective and learning a healthier pattern, because we all have things that make us feel icky. That's life. We don't get through careers or relationships or life without that, but learning the skills that we need to, acknowledging that we do have to sometimes dip our toe into the pond and adopting learning habits, mindsets that are effective, understanding who we are and why we are the way we are, where we've come from, not what's wrong with us, but what's happened to us to make us feel this way mm-hmm. or think this way. And then bringing those skills into whatever the ick factor is, whether it's conflict resolution, rejection, or some of the other challenges that we have.
So, Janet, when you were talking about the shared focus mm-hmm. And kind of like that shared buy-in or that kind of shared goal, that made me think of something. I wish I could remember where I heard this or where I read it. I think it's a form of meditation, but it's really quick and easy. And it's something that I have incorporated when I have been in conflict. I work in a school. Sometimes we have really intense, and I would even say kind of aggressive interactions with families. I work in a school. Sometimes I want to dehumanize my central office administration. And when my brain goes there, I've started trying again, intentionally and deliberately, to first humanize the people I'm sharing space and time with, to first humanize these individuals that I'm interacting with. And it's really a quick thing. It's I, like you, want, fill in the blank. Now, in this case, it could be your shared focus, Janet. For me, it's been a little more kind of just general human experience sorts of things. I, like you, want to be happy. I, like you, want to feel calm. And again, I know there are people out there who are like, Katie, how could that possibly work? Mm-hmm. And what I would suggest to you is to consider how what you're doing right now is working or not working. Because I will tell you, having spent many years crafting, ways to compel somebody to see something the way that I would like them to see it, mm-hmm. and having that not work, I had to like look at doing something different. And so the very first step I take now is I, like you, want blank. And it changes then how I enter those interactions, and it changes how I experience that other person, even if it's somebody that I'm kind of feeling frustrated with, that I have some conflict with. It changes the experience of that interaction with that person from the outset.
Do you actually say that out loud, or do you say that to yourself? Mm-mm.
Say it to myself in my mind, kind of imagine that person before I'm going into that meeting or before I'm going into that situation. And it kind of brings my whole system into a place of calm, which lets me stay right upstairs in my brain. You know, we talk about this notion right of, am I showing up, you know, if I'm showing up in this really emotional place, I'm not going to be able to stay objective and to consider multiple perspectives. And so it is my responsibility to kind of settle the system so right that I can access all parts of myself and my knowledge base and my most resource self when I'm entering those conversations, particularly mm-hmm. interactions that are in the ick pond.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And high emotional value, yet still wanting to maintain that objective view in conversation. Mm-hmm.
Yep. Yeah. I love that. And mm-hmm. I have a sidebar question, which is, what does the word cudgel mean?
I didn't know either. I was going to write it down and look it up afterwards.
It's like a big hammer.
Oh, yeah. I thought it was a verb.
No. Here,
okay.
Guys, here.
All right. Cudgel.
Like, yeah.
With a K or a C.
How do you spell it?
I'm getting it for you right now. Unless Janet's already got it.
Oh, a short, thick stick used as a weapon.
Yes.
Or it could be a verb, beat with a cudgel. They would lie
there
in wait and cudgel her to death.
Yes. So ooh, you may be like, Katie, wouldn't a hammer suffice? And I guess my point to you all is, a cudgel just seems a little more primitive and aggressive. And that's why I chose that word, because sometimes, yeah. If I've ever been in that place, it is thick. And it is
the dark side of iHeart language.
Yeah. Sorry, friends.
C-U-D-G-E-L.
Yes. Right. It's funny what comes up.
Mm-hmm. What is a cudgel used for?
Word choice to describe how I feel I am behaving in those moments and with those interactions. But it's
no, I think that's great. I often think of words as knives. So it's kind of that same thing, but I mean, mean words as knives. But hey, I do have to put in, I have two things that I just eternally come back to. And this is more in my relationships, but I think in the workplace, it's important too. And that is the fighting fair and making good apologies. I really, really believe in those two things. And I think they have importance to relationships and some of the ick stuff in the workplace. Mm-hmm. So by fighting fair, I mean, don't dredge up like all the 300 other episodes, examples, times where something happened. Like, stay in the moment, deal with the specific thing, and keeping it about yourself, you know, when, and don't say like when you did, like, just be like, when we were talking, I felt blah. So really make it about yourself. Or during that heated conversation, my immediate response was defensiveness. And like, just really, so don't dredge up 1,300,000 years of trouble. Make it about yourself and your response, and then have some productive, like, what's the shared thing you're moving towards together? And how do you, what's the thing you're bringing towards that?
Can I add, keep it simple too?
100%.
I think I would also add, you know, when we think about apologizing, an unqualified apology is important. So it's not, I am really sorry, but what I was intending was, I'm sorry this happened, but what I meant to do was, I think that can really take some of the air out of the balloon, right? You're saying, you're sorry, but are you? I don't know, you know?
yeah, because in apology land, I think, well, first of all, don't use but. I'm sorry, but that wipes away the apology.
No buts.
Don't make an excuse. Like, even if it's so easy to say this and so hard to do it, but even if you think you're 90% right and 10% wrong, like, own the 10% and just like leave the other part around, or, you know, leave it to the side. Sort of the, I'm sorry I said blah. The standalone thing. So not the I'm sorry, but, or not the I'm sorry if I offended you. I'm sorry that you're feeling upset. I'm sorry that this is so, those are just like igniters.
Right, because it's sort of the workaround for taking responsibility for that part that is yours. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, my words were hurtful. Full stop.
Right.
I'm sorry, my actions didn't consider how this would affect you. Full stop.
I have had to do one of those. And the hardest part is starting.
Yeah.
And the viewpoint is not, I'm apologizing because I'm supposed to apologize because I'm right and you're really still wrong, but apologizing because their view is valid. And once you start saying the I'm sorry, that's the hardest part. Mm-hmm.
I have to practice the wording before I say it out loud. So maybe it's, I am so sorry, period. I had no intention to undermine your authority. I can imagine how that feels to you. Next time, I'm going to really take a pause before I offer a comment. Or next time, I will talk privately with you about my concern or whatever it is. So sort of that kind of structure when I'm my best person, that's what I come to.
Mm-hmm. Boy, it's hard though, isn't it? I mean, even when you're thinking through like your rehearsal, I can hear you kind of as you're saying it, revising, and as you're, you know, like
so hard.
And there's all these feelings that come up, like even when we're talking about authentic apology. What is the feeling? Is it nervousness? Is it that we're feeling vulnerable? Is it that we're sacrificing some sort of leverage or power? Like we have these weird experiences and messages around the notion of apology mm-hmm. that make it much, much messier.
Yeah, I feel like part of it is like, I might be a little bit wrong, but I still am absolutely certain that I'm a lot right. Right. Otherwise we wouldn't be having this disagreement. And so I think it's really tamping down that stuff I'm sure that I'm right about. And I'm probably not going to stop being sure that I'm right about that, but it's like cracking open that place where I'm like, okay, I'm going to give a little space that you might be sort of partly right too. Right. And I think the other part that's hard is you often want the other person to be at the same place where they're like, you're mm-hmm. right. I absolutely blah, 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 and own their stuff. And they might or might not be at that place. Oh. And that doesn't factor in to whether you should apologize or not. You need to own your part,
right,
regardless of whether they give you a satisfactory response. And that kind of sucks sometimes, right?
Right.
You want to apologize if they're going to also meet you halfway.
So remember that any sort of dynamic that sets up a situation of rightness and wrongness, winning and losing, loss and gain mm-hmm. is going to already kind of supercharge that experience mm-hmm. to not go well. And this is where I, like you, want blank. Listen, friends, I want you to try it as an experiment. Let's have some sort of little case study, shall we? Let's figure out if it changes your experience of interaction with folks. Just try it. Because it's easy. It's not like you have to like go through a multi-step process. You sort of think about the good things you want, mm-hmm. and then you see whoever it is you're thinking about in your mind, and you apply those good things to them as well.
I love that. That is simple. What was your phrase before? That's simple, but not easy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But also simple, but not incidental, right? Like that's really, right. really important. I, like you, want blah, blah, blah.
Mm-hmm. And if you feel like as soon as I start to think of the specific things, I get all ginned up about it and I start getting agitated, then start with these larger concepts of mm-hmm. safety and health and happiness and living with ease and joy.
Yeah, no, I'm laughing because I'm thinking to myself, I'm like, I, like you, want you to recognize.
Right, that's not how it works, Janet. I, like you, want to have you see it the way I see it. No, that's not it. That's not.
I was going to add to that, Katie, that I think there might be moments where you're just not ready to have that conversation yet. Mm-hmm. And I think giving, you know, whether it's like just stepping away from the situation. And then there's this whole concept of like circle back. I know like Brené Brown and some of those speakers and writers will talk about circling back. Like, you know, I'm not comfortable with how we left things. Can we talk about X? So sort of when you get yourself out of your reptile brain, coming back and maybe the apology and the conversation, likely the apology and the conversation happen later with some distance.
Mm-hmm. I think we were hoping to continue to have distance with the ICPON, but I think we kind of did okay. It's okay that we, with waiting, like we put on our rubber boots, we stepped in, And now we're getting the heck out. Okay, Maddie, Janet, what are your final thoughts about anything having to do with this ick pond?
We all have ick ponds. And we all have things that we have to work our way through. The healthier, positive, inclusive approaches that we take will have a direct impact on the results that we get. So be brave. Dip your toe as needed into the ick pond. And if you're challenged to swim across the entire ick pond, know that you're up to the challenge. I get, hopefully you're up to the challenge, but learn how to do that.
Nice. I was thinking about your farmyard pond analogy, Maddie, and I was thinking that sometimes the rain will come and the ick pond will be bigger and sometimes it'll be smaller. Mm-hmm. And then I was also thinking about, I got one of those smart straws for Christmas, you know, the ones where it has a filter where you could go into like the gooeyest, yuckiest water and just like suck through and you would have like drinkable, potent water.
I thought you were talking about the dysphagia straws.
Maybe I'm using the wrong word, but they're those filtration ones for like camping or hiking. But so perhaps, I mean, the ick pond will be there, but perhaps we just need our like our filtration systems to be able to kind of like siphon out the drinkable parts. I also just want to say, this is not a one-time thing. This is an ongoing process. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Katie, final thoughts?
I, like you, want to be happy. I, like you, want to be successful. I, like you, want to experience calm in all things.
Mm-hmm. I, like you, want to drain the ick pond.
Yeah. That ain't happening, Janet. So what do we do instead?
Okay. Oh, thanks, you two. This was really great.
I love our conversations. Thanks, Katie, for hosting.
Thank you.
Janet, you're hosting our next episode, and you're talking about having your own personal board of directors.
Right. Oh. It'll be a good conversation.
We'll see you on that next episode. Hope today's conversation has created some aha moments for you and motivated you to become a better SLP, continuing to connect some of those missing links between what you know and how to use that knowledge. Thank you for downloading the Missing Link for SLPs podcast. And if you enjoyed the show, I'd love you to subscribe, rate it, and leave a short review. Also, please share an episode with a friend. Together, we can raise awareness and help more SLPs find and connect those missing links and get the information needed to help them feel confident in their patient care every step of the way. Follow me on Instagram and join the Fresh SLP community on Facebook. Show notes are always available, so come learn more at freshslp.com. Let's make those connections. You got this.